afternoon. Present at the table are Senators Torgerson, Phillips, Donnelly, and Pierce. This afternoon, we have another results-based government work session. It's the first work session for workforce development, which is made up in the Office of the Governor by the Alaska Human Resources Investment Council, or ARIC, along with programs that are in the Department of Labor, Department of Community and Regional Affairs, Department of Education, the Department of Health and Social Services, and the University of Alaska. And each of the committee members and probably everybody in the audience has a single sheet labeled the Alaska Workforce Development System that describes pretty much the authority and funding stream and how these programs are laid out. You'll note that there are a rather confusing array of solid lines, dotted lines, and dotted and slashed lines, which is one of the reasons probably that we're here. We have a lot of programs, and there's some confusion, at least in my mind, I can honestly say, of how they all fit together. Senator Torgerson is head of the Workforce Development Subcommittee, and so we're going to let him lead the work sessions. We'll be meeting this afternoon and again tomorrow morning, and if necessary, we will carry over tomorrow's meeting. Senator Torgerson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will, as the Chair just stipulated, more or less follow the worksheet that was handed out. We're starting an overview by Eric. It's Executive Director of Eric, Mr. Mike Andrews, which, Mike, you can come up and join us here. Just before we get started, though, I thought I might put this whole thing in a little bit of a perspective. For the first time in memory, the Finance Committees have spun off all the training and workforce programs into one subcommittee so that we could go beyond departmental lines and look at what's happening and try to realize if there's any duplication in the effort that's being done. To some degree, we know that this is one of the responsibilities, or maybe the only responsibility of the Human Resource Council, is to also look at this. But we're here to help promote that to some degree. The total budget we're talking about here is $93,943,000. It's not a little chunk of money, it's a lot. But each individual component, as you'll see as we get into this, varies all over the board from relatively small programs to some very large programs. In our initial overviews, which has been chasing numbers more than chasing results, we found some very interesting statistics as to how much money is actually hitting the road, how much money is actually going to train people and put people to work and so forth. And our early estimates is that only $28 million of the $93 million is what's actually going out to work in what we consider to be, or at least I consider to be, the function of this council. We've early on have found some areas that seem to be excessively high administrative costs and lots of duplication throughout the whole process. So as we go through the results based and look at each individual program, I know that, again, we'll be looking program by program and not the overall spectrum of that and how that all fits together. But Mr. Andrews will be here throughout the whole period of this time, and afterwards we'll have another subcommittee meeting with Mr. Andrews and anyone else that wants to on how we want to proceed after we go through the results and the individual budgets. Now, we don't, some of the information, we've had copy machine problems, and some of the information is being copied for Department of Labor, so we don't have any of that in front of us right now. But you will notice when you get into this, if you look at the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council, on the back of it, we have the CF1 forms that I think is an important part of this, which I know that we're not to really zero in on how much money each one of these is required to spend to operate, but I think it's an important part to put a little bit of this in perspective as to full-time employees and some of the other stuff. So we have included that in each packet so that committee members can look at that, and it'll help substantially, I think, put everything in perspective. So with that, I'd like to ask Mr. Andrews to lead us through his form, and I think what we'll do is, as we've done in the past, we'll go through the mission statement and then stop right there and ask questions and then go on to activities and results, and, but we'll let him make his presentation and then ask questions then. Mr. Andrews.
Thank you, Senator. Members of the committee, I'm Mike Andrews. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council. The mission of the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council is as follows. The Alaska Human Resource Investment Council's purpose is to facilitate the process necessary to create and maintain an efficient, effective, and integrated human resource investment system. This comprehensive system will provide employment education and training services to assure Alaskan employers have a skilled workforce and Alaskan workers have employment choices. Would you like me to go through the activities?
Is there any thoughts on the mission statement so far?
It comes out of the statutes, right? Directly out.
It's based around the statutes and the purpose. We've cleaned it up.
Which is off federal law?
State law.
State law.
The state law that established the ERIC.
Okay, go ahead with your activities.
Activities, and I'd like to just stop and thank the committee for forcing me to put this all on one page.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. You say that publicly.
Well, it actually is a great exercise. Activities. Develops the process for one unified plan for all human resource investment programs. Provides oversight and monitors human resource investment programs. Brokers change among programs to reduce duplication and improve services. Advises the governor and legislature on policy for the system. Promotes innovations that cross programs and drive collaboration for an effective system. And reports out on human resource investment issues. The priorities are desired results. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. In terms of the activities, I understand developing a process to attempt to get to one unified plan and provides oversight and monitors the programs. I understand monitors, but I have a question about the oversight and then a question in the next to last one about driving the collaboration. What tools does ERIC have to provide real oversight? Now, to me, oversight is making sure that things happen, not just watching. And so, and to drive collaboration, you've got to have some sort of direct authority. What do you have?
Well, first of all, in terms of oversight and monitoring, all programs respond to the ERIC and requests for updates in terms of their performance of their programs, and that's one way we monitor programs to make sure they're meeting federal and state requirements. And so that oversight is performed through committees of the Human Resource Investment Council. We've broken ourselves down into four committees to assist on that oversight. As far as the tools that we have the law and the purpose stated in the law, but the critical piece is the plan. Is the plans themselves? Are the plans themselves? What we have is a system with several plans that have not been integrated. That was one of the ideas of forming the council, was to bring the governor's vocational education plan in, the JTPA plan in, the dislocated worker plan in, the Wagner-Peiser plan in. We're about to move into that process of direct planning now, to implement the strategies and the goals of the ERIC, and then look at ways to measure how that plan is handled. And so that's how we're going to be able to report back out on whether we were effective, but we're putting it right into the plan.
Okay, to use, Senator Torgerson, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Use an analogy of contingency plans for prevention of oil spills in the Prince William Sound. There is a system in place where if you don't have an approved contingency plan, or you're out of compliance with your approved contingency plan, DEC can come in and shut you down, and there will be no more, your tanker won't sail. Does ERIC have the authority? You approve these plans, and does ERIC have the authority to stop one of the programs if it's not complying with the plan?
I don't think we do. I think we have the ability to provide technical assistance to improve the plans so that they meet federal and state requirements. But at this time, we don't know of any that are out of compliance. But I don't think we have the power to stop one.
Well, let me think about that. So you have, however, how many groups are currently under your responsibility?
17 programs, 16 federal, one state program.
Is that down from?
No, this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before you became.
No, it's the same number that when you created the council.
I thought it was slightly more.
I would imagine that each one of these programs has a different mission statement.
Yes, Senator.
And the 16 federal, would it be fair to say that that mission statement wasn't ours and that we don't have any latitude in that mission statement?
No, I think we have a lot of latitude because the state actually creates the mission statement, the state agency, and submits that in their plan. It follows what the federal government would like to see, but I'm pretty sure that every mission statement that you're going to see has been developed by the programs themselves, and they should have a fit with our overall mission.
What your answer to Senator Pierce, if I got it right, was that if you find one of these 17 out of compliance with their mission statement, that you have no authority to bring them back in compliance?
I think what our authority is that if we evaluate and assess a program and find it insufficient, then it's our responsibility to try to correct that, to help that program, to make the program aware of it, to make the council aware of it, and try to make corrections. There's no authority that I know of. The federal government has authority when people aren't in compliance, and I think the state would have too, but not the council. I think our job is to make recommendations about programs that work and don't work.
You report to the federal government also?
No.
So how would they get a report on how these 16 programs are working?
They get them individually through their program agencies. That's part of the issue with the system. They're federally funded. They come from federal agencies to state agencies and then into the system. And that's the way the reporting goes back. We're the state council that looks at that reporting on a continual basis.
Okay. I guess I'll note for the committee's aspect here that we are looking at things that are outside of the area. I would assume that you may or may not have, or maybe not. ZABTEC, or the vocational programs, Kotchebue Tech, is that under your purview as not training institutions?
Not directly. Just connected through Carl Perkins and post-secondary.
Just the grant money that might go to them.
Primarily, yes. And then it's also part of the process is to work with those educational institutions to point out where market-based education and training is needed, where there's limited access to training, where we need more access, try to advise those groups.
The one state program is the STEP program?
Yes, Senator.
Well, I'll let you go on. I have mm-hmm. some other questions, but I think maybe when you get to the performance measures that we'll see that. So, is there other questions on the activities? Seeing none, would you proceed with your priorities?
Thank you. Priorities, desired results. These are the four goals that the council has laid out, so they are our priorities. Evaluate each program under Eric's oversight to optimize participant employability. Ensure access to quality employment, education, training, and employment. Services statewide, particularly to rural areas and for economically disadvantaged citizens. Strengthen the involvement of business and industry in developing Alaska's workforce, and advocate for all Alaska's human resource investment programs and for continuous improvement through evaluation, access, quality, and employer involvement. Those are the four goals of the council.
Let us digest those for a moment. I will say, this is the first time I saw this myself, so.
It's the first time I saw it. You guys rewrote it this morning.
Yes. Give us a moment here while we see if our wordsmithers did a good job here.
I think they did great.
Sounds good.
Okay, maybe we, is there questions right now on that? Let's go to the performance measures, and then we'll come back to that. I'm particularly interested in how you're going to ensure access. I mean, some of the words that are in here are, to me, give the meaning that you have a little bit of authority to go do something if somebody's out of compliance. And
if I can, on that point, Senator, before I go into performance measures, we this is why we're implementing a direct planning process. Rather than getting a plan that's mostly done and having a short time to approve it, we're getting in at the front end to try to move our goals in so that we can actually have performance measures within inside those plans so that we can report back later if we achieved any of these four things we're talking about. So if it's not in the written plan that's submitted to the federal agency, then we've lost our opportunity to really put that emphasis on there, and this is what the council wants to see. Performance measures. We can't tell you if the ERIC is successful at this time. The council is developing council performance measures for those four goals that we've stated, and cross-program human resource investment performance measures so that we can look across the system with several common indicators to see if, as a full system, we are improving. I just added some success indicators because it's hard to measure how a board or a council does. It's kind of a new science, but some of the success indicators that I've listed are the ERIC provides more information on the human resource investment system through one source than ever before. Relationships with departments, programs, federal agencies are developed. That's critical to have those relationships because as we get into this a little further, many of these programs cross agencies and it's not easy without good relationships. Council recommendations are being followed through by the HRI programs. We have written four major reports and come up with about 20 recommendations, and we're seeing action on every one of those recommendations by the council and by the programs they impact. A direct partner in system reform initiatives, Alaska's Job Centers Network, welfare reform, school to work, and the effort with Alaska's three private industry councils to create future workforce development boards so that regions can have human resource investment planning and allocations at the regional level. And also another success indicator, we think, is the level of focus on the human resource investment system for accountability and performance. It seems like 3 years ago people couldn't spell Human Resource Investment Council, and here we are talking about performance and accountability, so hopefully that's a success.
Okay, so workforce development boards are a new thing recently?
The workforce development boards are, there are about 36 states now that have created what you might call workforce development boards, or regional employment boards, or workforce investment boards. We have, the ERIC created a committee following the consolidation report where we recommended the creation of workforce development boards and got approval from the three private industry councils to transform into the new boards to avoid duplication of boards. We've been working on how that would look in the state, and we've been talking to some communities and with our partners on how to pull that together. We've got a lot of support from the right places, and we think this is critical because then our region can take not only the workforce development resources that would come to that area, but the economic development resources from the public side in that area, and do strategic economic and workforce development planning and pinpoint the resources where that community feels they're needed.
Is this intended to replace the PICs?
Yes.
And has it done so?
We're working toward it. There's still some bugs to work out. What the council is concerned about right now, we want to avoid extra costs while we give service to, let's say, 7 or 8 or 9 more regions, develop a quality process so that people can have the authority to use the federal and state funds. And three, to make sure that we're not creating a duplication of councils in the process that would increase costs. So we want to work those bugs out. We think we'll have that worked out over the summer and be looking at something next session.
I bored my committee. Okay. Questions on performance measures? I can't let you off that easy. I got to think of something.
I'll be back.
Will you? Well, I think most of this, I have other questions on how this ties in with JPTA and the PICS and so forth, but we'll maybe get into that. Did we get the stuff? Is that what this is? Okay, there aren't any questions. Mr. Andrews, and I appreciate your working with the committee putting this together. I know it's pretty hectic. Actually, everyone,
everybody's
Department of Labor and everyone worked from the first reports that I saw become leaps and bounds. You were writing me a story instead of giving bullets, and this is a little bit better. So let's go ahead. There's no questions, Mr. Andrews. We'll go ahead to the next one, and we'll ask you for a wrap-up, an overview, and maybe we'll, on Monday, I guess, is when we finish this up.
I'll be here. And, thank you very much.
Okay, next we'll go to the Department of Labor. And Dwight, who's going to come up for?
Senator Hurst, we have department directors as well as program people. So if you'd like to start off with on the top packet, I believe, depending on what you'd like to start with, Senator, research and analysis and the NOLIC.
Let's start with veterans programs. We're going to do these. We're not going to have an overview of the first unemployment services.
Okay, employment services. Director Rebecca Nance is here.
Okay, let's start with that one. That's first on my list. And then we'll go to from that one to the veterans programs, and then NAFTA, and the work opportunity tax credit program, and research analysis, and then whatever I forgot, NCOICC, whatever that is.
Senator.
National Occupation Information Coordinating Committee.
Work opportunity tax credit before NAFTA or NAFTA before?
I have veterans program, NAFTA, work opportunity program, RNA, and NOICC. It's last.
For the record, my name is Rebecca Gomez. Dwight is not used to my married name yet, and I'm the director of the Alaska Department of Labor Employment Security Division. And the first program that I will review is pretty short and sweet, and I will ask Ted Burke of my veterans program technical person to join me at the table. This program is 100% federally funded. We reach out to disabled veterans, and we also provide local veterans employment representatives around the state wherever possible. Our mission is to employ veterans. We have a lot of them. Per capita, we have more veterans in this state than anywhere else. In terms of activities, we do both case management, referral support to support services, and job development. The results we want is to increase the employment of our veterans, and the measure that we have is 20% of all veterans served will gain employment.
Okay. Maybe just for way of clarification, I think the mission statement is pretty straightforward, but what are we talking about with case management? Is that just number of people coming in looking for jobs that you call that a case management?
Actually, the case management, Senator, would be very specific to veterans. Some veterans may need, obviously they're in for employment assistance, but they may need assistance to obtain housing. It's looking at the whole veteran person as opposed to just the employment aspect of things. In addition to housing, they might need some counseling services that aren't work-related, and we can hook them up with a veterans counselor at the VA center. They may need some referrals to a veterans hospital. There are just a wide variety of potential barriers as veterans make the transition into civilian employment that those folks assist with.
Is the funding stable?
Well, we just got a reduction of about $150,000 this year. So it has been decreasing as veterans' numbers decline across the nation. We get hit proportionally, and I believe that that hurts us because we have such a high per capita population of veterans in the state.
Questions? Senator Cruz.
Thank you. This is a federally funded program. Is it a program that the feds just flat require the state to do, or if the state doesn't do the feds come in and take over the program like some
federal? They wouldn't take over the program. The funding would simply go away. There's one state that does not participate in the program, and that's certainly the state's choice to offer that or not.
And then the state, and then, but the feds still provide the program in that state. What state is it?
There simply would not be a veterans employment program in the state.
We do any match of the funding?
No.
Your performance measure of 20% of all veterans served will gain employment. How much are you currently, this program has been going on for a while. Is that a goal? Is that a reach? Is that something you don't normally get to, 20%?
I'm going to defer to my technical person, Ted Burke, on that. I think Ted put it best yesterday in the working session that we had here, Senator, in that these are repeat customers. These folks generally have a lot of barriers. So, Ted, if you could comment on that.
Let me tell you what that tells me. That means you're not successful 80% of the time. Is that the case, 80%?
That's not the case, and we have qualitative requirements that we have to meet in veterans performance standards that we report to the federal government every quarter, and it's total veterans served and how successful we are. When we talk about repeat customers, what we're talking about is some of the people that have gotten barriers during the course of their military environment that repeat themselves, like PTSD with the Vietnam vets, era vets and such, that we will continually reserve to help them if they fall into the hole that they have as far as their disability is concerned. We work very closely with the VA to overcome these barriers. We're very successful with a lot of people in respect to gaining full employment at times, but we do have a lot of repeat customers we serve. We reach out greatly for the homeless veterans and the veterans that really seek those extra efforts on our part. So it's not a solid thing that I could say to you, we're going to fulfill that employment obligation for the rest of their life. That's when we speak of repeat customers.
Wouldn't you agree that to put a measure in there that 20% would gain employment means that 80% don't?
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And is that, I just find that as a strange measure to have that 20% in there.
That's hand in glove with the federal measures that are provided to us. And that also takes into the seasonality, does it not, Ted?
There is some seasonality to it. I think that the key element here that I don't want to be misread into that 20% is that there are tons of other services measured in this program provided to the veterans that we will attempt to really work over before we gain full employment. When we talk about full employment, we're talking about something that's a continuing employment forever and a day that doesn't exist in this day and age. But we have specific established percentages that they wish us to make sure we meet with every quarterly report, and that is the 20% average that we're talking about every quarterly report. We try to exceed these, and we do a very good job of exceeding these on a regular basis, Senator.
How many veterans you serve, roughly?
Total veterans in this last report was 2498 that I have. This is just a routine statewide report that I submit on a quarterly basis.
Questions? Okay, sir. Thank you. We'll go on to NAFTA PA then.
Senator Ted Burke gets the opportunity of staying at the table here with us, as he's also the technical person on the NAFTA TAA program. The mission of NAFTA TAA is to assist workers who are adversely affected by foreign trade and production. Probably the most evident cases of those that have affected the state recently are the Ketchikan Pulp Corporation closure in Ketchikan, the Sitka shutdown. So that would be Wrangell. Generally, well, I think the big ones have been the timber production. The activities related to NAFTA TAA, career counseling, testing, training certification, job placement assistance, relocation, job search allowances. The results that we strive for are to help affected workers find employment that pays wages equal to at least 80% of their previous wage. And the measure is the percentage of affected workers find employment.
Okay. Senator Pierce.
Thank you. What kind of jobs qualify?
Senator, I'm going to defer to Ted, and before I do that, this is a very specific reimbursable program. So we are reimbursed, and I know that you've taken a hard look at this, Senator Torgerson. So we're actually reimbursed for the training and relocation of these folks, and a lot of it has to do with the labor market that they're searching for work in, and with that, I will turn it over to Ted to answer the question.
Senator, when a company becomes certified by the U.S. Department of Labor for this particular program, every worker in the company is entitled to the benefits of this program. Whether office, production, makes no difference. Every worker is entitled to it. And I notify every worker of their entitlement within 7 days of being certified. The company works very closely with me to give a listing of the people that have been laid off. The first evolution when we start to provide services to them is to review what their particular experience and skill levels are, and if it is in a labor market that exists in the community where they live, we of course would help them with reemployment benefits right off the bat and try to get them right back into the labor market. If there is no current labor market that exists for that individual, then we look at retraining efforts and pick an occupation that does have a labor market, hopefully, that can sustain some good employment for the future.
So you're training for, presumably, for a job that exists, or at least an industry that's here.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm trying to figure out, did I hear you right that because of the mill closures, Ketchikan qualified under this program?
Yes, ma'am.
So the feds decided that because of NAFTA, those mills closed?
I'm not in a position to tell you what the decision-making process is. What happens is any company that feels they've had to shut down or reduce production as a result of under the Foreign Trade Program, the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, or under the new NAFTA program, the issues associated with our NAFTA policymaking processes. The petition is filed by the company, by the union representing workers at that company, or by three or more workers at that company. One of those three can file a petition to the U.S. Department of Labor. The U.S. Department of Labor takes a full look at what is happening in our trade policies in the United States today, what we've established, what's happening under the NAFTA rules, and they render a decision. They do not share the decision-making process with me. They give me the results and say a company has been certified. At that time, I start to work with the company to get a listing of every employee that's laid off as a result of this. There's a window that goes along with this. It's a year, it's generally a year prior to the date of certification, so all employees laid off in the year prior to, and then all employees laid off 2 years after the date of certification would be eligible for the benefits of this program.
In my review, I came to the conclusion that it's more federal policy than it is affecting the NAFTA. Any kind, there's a federal policy change that affects jobs, such as the Tongass, that they have stretched the terms of the agreement. But also going through there, I had asked, and I know you answered to me or to Dwight, Mr. Perkins, that came back to me, but I noticed that this program isn't very big. It's about $350,000, if I remember right, the total reimbursable that was submitted to me. But of that, probably 80% was spent outside the state of Alaska, for a huge number, for training and things of this nature. And I question why that was, and I guess I still do. Most of these people were from Ketchikan, or a lot of them. Why didn't we run them through existing Alaska facilities? Especially since it's reimbursable.
The way we look at the review process with every applicant that comes through is, first of all, after we make the decision that we should look at a retraining effort, and through the assessment process with a counselor, the best occupation training for that particular individual is worked out with the individual. They are required by the program to give me three schools, listed schools that offer the occupational training, and in that listing of schools, of course, the cost associated with that occupational training goes with it. One of the key elements in this whole program, sir, is reasonable cost and cost associated with that. Some of the benefits that come under this program have a major impact on reasonable cost. It's not only just the tuition at the training facility that's considered, it's the travel to the training facility, and it's also an added amount of money available to an individual that's going to maintain two separate residences while attending training. If a person is required to maintain a residence, and we'll use Ketchikan as an example, and leave the family behind, then this program also brings to the table supporting subsistence costs associated with that. But when I make a decision, I have to include travel to training, subsistence costs, and the tuition at that facility for the total package on what I can or cannot approve is reasonable cost. That's why I ask for three estimates. To give you an example, and I know you probably know better than me, but if I send a person to school in from Ketchikan that was going to attend school in Anchorage at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus, the per diem rate for me to pay is $96 a day during season and $126 a day during the or off season for 96, $126. When I multiply that out for a person that wishes to go to a training program that's 6 months or longer, their ticket, along with the tuition costs and the travel to training, is tremendous. If I send a person from Ketchikan to Seattle, Tacoma, the per diem rate under the federal guidelines is roughly about $46.50 a day or $47.50 a day. Add that to the tuition costs, and when I look at the reasonable cost, sir, that's kind of some of the decisions I have to make. I do always make an individual look at a training facility in their commuting area first. And there's no question, I force them to go to there if they offer the occupational training that they're wanting to take, sir.
Would it be fair to say that under this rule that if a company is domiciled in some other state besides Alaska, that their employees in Alaska still qualify? You had some BP and Conoco and some other folks in that list, and I don't understand how we've done anything to affect them. I'll cut to the chase for you. How did we get BP employees in this program? Certainly NAFTA hasn't affected them up here.
They were not NAFTA approved, Senator. They were Trade Act approved. These are two separate programs. And if you look at the certifications that I had, all of the oil companies that were certified under Trade Adjustment Assistance and the Trade Act of 1974. But for the three timber-related industry companies down south here, they got both the NAFTA and the Trade Adjustment Assistance certification from the U.S. Department of Labor.
Interesting. Do you track these folks to make sure the federal government require you to do that?
Yes, sir.
After you, so what is that period of time?
I track them at all times while in training. They must maintain a 2.0 grade point average or better. I get reports on them on a regular basis. If they're in a college environment, of course, I get it on a semester or quarterly basis. If they're in a vocational school, many of the vocational training facilities will give me a weekly report, and I track those. When they graduate, we roughly start to work with them right away. I notify them immediately of the other entitlements with the program, such as job search and relocation, and we work on their reemployment efforts at that time. Once they get a job, if they ask me for relocation benefits, I get a verification with the employer on the job that was offered and the hourly wage that was offered, and that it's permanent employment. If I get those three things that meet the criteria of the program, then I assist them with relocating the family to the new location.
One last question. I assume this program started with the passing of NAFTA. Is this going to go away, or what's your thoughts on?
This did not start with the passing of NAFTA. The Trade Adjustment Assistance Act was initiated in 1974, sir. So we had Trade Adjustment Assistance, and that was taking care of the foreign trade issues up until the NAFTA evolution came in 1993. What I see happening, sir, is more emphasis being placed and more money being placed in the NAFTA arena, and the Trade Adjustment Assistance monies being lowered.
Other questions on this program? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to the next one, moving right along to the, what we got, Work Opportunity Tax Credit and Welfare to Work Tax Credit. Formerly Targeted Tax Credit Job Program.
They keep changing the name on us, Senator.
All right, what is it now?
It's now WOTC, Worker Opportunity Tax Credit. When the flowchart was made in the consolidation report, it was listed as TJTC, the Targeted Jobs Tax Credit. I'm going to ask Bill Ellers of my staff, who's a technical person for the Worker Opportunity Tax Credit Program, to join me at the table.
Tell us how big this program is.
It is, well, TJTC sunsetted, was that 2 years ago, Bill?
4 years ago?
Oh, 4 years ago, rather. And it was reincarnated as the WOTC. At this point in time, we received applications from about, 547 individuals looking for certification. And out of those, we certified 367. About 68% of them.
Okay, does this work? I'm familiar with the TJTC. Is it similar to that? You go into the Department of Labor and you fill out a form or something, and then, I don't know, explain that to you.
Actually, the program has been simplified where the employer has an IRS form that they can have all new employees complete. And upon the completion of that form, they can identify if an individual is potentially qualified for the program or meets one of the target group membership. At that point, they would fill out one additional piece of paper and mail them to me, where we make a determination whether that individual is indeed a member of one of the target groups, and we mail a certification back to the employer or a denial based on the determination that's made. And then the employer uses that certification when they file for their income tax credit.
This has nothing, this is federal income tax we're talking about, and federal
Correct.
Tax credits.
Correct.
And there's a laundry list, or there used to be a laundry list of jobs that they were trying to target, or not, maybe not jobs, but what's the right word? Classification, maybe?
They're
individual.
Now listed.
Is that down here?
It's
for
listed
okay.
under priorities and desired reform.
I'm getting ahead of you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You want
sure.
go through the list?
Sure. So we basically try to promote this program to businesses. I'm going to go up to activities. I didn't cover that. Monitor the application process and certify that the workers are from one or more of the following eligible target groups, and increase the number of people from the following target groups who become and remain engaged in paid employment: ATAP recipient family, food stamp recipient family member between the ages of 18 and 24, a veteran with a food stamp recipient family, disabled person referred by vocational rehab, an ex-felon from low-income family, a person who has recently received Social Security income, a member of a family that received ATAP AFDC for at least 18 consecutive months before the date of hire or whose ATAP AFDC eligibility has expired. And this was the first, 97 was the first year of WOTC, and we're looking to increase the number of targeted workers to engage in this program so that employers will receive the tax credit and they will become gainfully employed.
You share those 500 and something, what was it?
542
certification requests. That isn't the number of employers, but the number of requests we've received from employers.
And 367 certifications. So about almost 68% of the people who applied were certified.
Why such a small amount? Are we confused as to who we're targeting here?
I think the program is slow to grow with employers. One is negative impact of the old TJTC program. Employers are afraid to get involved in the paperwork. They don't. A second is not enough employers know about it. In Alaska, you know, we have a large number of small employers, and it seems like perhaps it's because of their turnover rate is lower than in larger. The larger employers, they haven't had the opportunity to use the program yet. We have tried to make the program as well known as possible by issuing news releases. We've had, I think, 4 different news releases about the program, and we have sent out a newsletter to all the employers that we have on the UI tax files. We've sent letters on 3 occasions to advise them of the program.
That's roughly a list of what, 15,000,
well,
give or take?
Yeah, it's a condensed list. I think it went out to about 9,000.
You're apparently carrying some negative within your own program if you're only approving 68%. So why do we have 32% dropout? Or not dropouts, but unapproved.
Well, first of all, that percent is higher. That's the number that were approved in that program year. Now, a certain percent, maybe another 10% were cases that hadn't been determined yet, and they were approved. So that percent is probably closer to 75 to 80% and are being approved. The ones that aren't being approved are, one, there is a very strict deadline on filing for this. An employer must file within 21 days of the date the individual starts work, and a number of employers, because they don't know about the program soon enough or they don't respond quickly enough, being denied the credit. And then there are a certain number that where an individual will identify themselves as a member of a target group, but when I've done the verification, I find out that they're not qualified. There was a change in the law in this October where individuals that are on ATAP or AFDC would receive the program if they received benefits for 9 months, any 9 months in the last 18. That's actually helped Alaskans to qualify for the program. Before that time, the previous year, the program stated they had to have drawn 9 consecutive months. So more Alaskans are now being qualified for the program because of that change in the law.
We're also doing some marketing efforts with not only the WOTC, but other
we're working with our partner agencies who have some other incentives that they're aware of, and we're working on that now. It's a work in progress in terms of getting the word out to employers.
And how many people does it take to operate this program?
You're looking at them.
So basically, they would go into the whatever the unemployment offices in their district, and then they ship it off to you for review. Is that
the employers send their information directly to me?
They send them directly to you. Okay. Questions on this program? I would assume that you are looking for a pretty substantial increase when we get into more closely to the target on the 2 year for welfare to work.
Yes.
When we start dropping off at this program. Is there any federal limits on how many you can issue, or dollars, or
no
guidelines
no
that
limits.
Way? So you've got a blank check here. But
well, IRS has it, not me.
And is there, if you approve it, is there any oversight or any chance to be disapproved after you went through it?
Yes. We do an audit. But first of all cases or all certifications are verified. There are two people that work at the program part-time.
You doubled already in just a couple of minutes.
Don't tell me.
That individual verifies all certifications to make sure that the certification has been issued properly. That's one of the stipulations of the program. Second, we do a quarterly audit on a small percentage of our caseload to make sure that the program is being carried out according to the law.
And the requirements are federal?
Correct.
Questions? Thank you. Onward to, what do we got next? R&A, research and analysis. We have to get back. Did we skip employment services portion, or is that?
We can go into that. That's under my purview. Would you rather do that?
Well, I didn't know you were switching out people here. Maybe we ought to.
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
Services? Sure. Leroy Davis, can you sign
up? Oh, you're right here.
Okay.
Which one are you doing, Senator Torgerson?
We're going to
research and analysis.
No. Employment, so actually the first on the list, and we skipped over and went to the veterans program. So we're going to employment services.
The program is employment services, and our mission is to provide employment services to businesses and job seekers, providing workers to employers and employees to businesses. Our activities are pretty straightforward, accepting applications from job seekers, job orders from employers, matching applicants with job orders, referral to job training, informing job seekers about job opportunities. The results we hope for are an increased use of employment services by job seekers and businesses, and our measure is the number of individuals who are hired through employment service referrals, and the number of percentage of individuals who receive staff-delivered services that result in job placement. And with me at the table is Leroy Davis, the program manager for the employment service.
Okay, let's set the stage. This is through how many offices?
We have 19 offices, four of which are seasonal.
And $9,398,000, is any general fund in this?
No, there are not any general funds in this.
114 employees, or thereabouts. Actually, pretty straightforward. Questions? Can't rag you around on UI division. It's not in here.
Senator, you're always welcome to invite me to your office. I'd be happy to discuss that with you.
I'm waiting until the audit gets done.
Okay.
Then I'll take you on.
Okay.
I look forward to it. Get all my ammunition lined up. Well, actually, I don't have any questions. It's pretty straightforward. If none else, then we'll get off easy. Not one question.
My objective is to make the program tinker-proof, Senator.
Well, we'll put this together.
Your staff.
Well, good deal. Well, I mean, I don't know. As far as I know, it seems to be working great with what we're doing now. Is there any federal funds that may be in jeopardy because of this, or any changes in the federal law that might impact how we're doing business?
Actually, Senator, there in the President's budget, there is a slight reduction proposed for the Wagner-Peiser grant, which is how the Employment Service is funded. That came as a surprise to me because we were told 2 years ago that we were going to have static, you know, straightforward funding, stable funding for the next 5 years. So I'm interested in seeing how that's going to play out. They're trying to divert some funds from the Employment Service to more of an electronic labor exchange, which we're involved in anyway. We had a significant reduction 2 years ago, as you know. $1 million of our budget, almost 10%, was reduced. It was taken from the federal budget, and we are only one of six states that doesn't get any state-funded support for Employment Service activities.
Does your mission statement change any with the advent of one-stop shops?
No. We just lend our expertise to our partner agencies who need our assistance, and they're, you know, we have common customers.
Co-location?
Common customers. You're good.
Thanks. I appreciate that. All right, let's go to research and analysis. We're moving right through this. Okay.
For the record, I'm R.B. Williams, Director of Administrative Services, Department of Labor, and sitting with me is Chris Miller, who is the Department's Chief of Research and Analysis. You mentioned, Senator, how wordy the original submissions were, and you can see from our final program review form that that certainly is the case with RNA, but what we have done for this purpose is to focus on information and analysis that is available to the employment and training programs. Of course, RNA has other initiatives that they're involved in, but for this purpose, we're limiting, you know, our presentation to the workforce development program.
Okay, let's start. I can't help it. I got to know a few numbers. How big is your budget, and how many people are we talking about?
38. People budget number,
$2.5 million.
I didn't
come with those, Bea. We're not.
We've been timing you.
I asked earlier, but I thought it was going to be staple to these reports. Okay, continue.
It was sort of duct tape for about for the numbers, Senator. Sorry.
Well, it's hard for me to look at this without knowing.
What happened to?
I guess I'm the only one at the table having trouble with that. But I'm chairing this, so. Too bad.
Oh. Well, and how we, Senator, put those numbers in perspective is that if the committee, if program people feel that it's important that employment and training be based on where, what, and when jobs are available, on where Alaskans are available and what training they need for employment in the state of Alaska, then RNA can make an important contribution to workforce development. And I can turn the presentation of our program review over to Chris Miller.
As far as activities, we collect data, we analyze, and we distribute. That's pretty much what we do. Results, information distributed, people available to the human resource programs to use, and so that they can make informed choice. Measure is accurate information in a timely fashion. If it's not accurate, then nobody's going to use us or need us or want us. And if it's not timely, then the decision is going to be without it.
Are 100% federal funded?
For all our RNA, no, we do have some general funds. That is...
Our general fund senators support the census work that we do, and there's some, about a $75,000 match for the work we do for occupational safety and health programs that's required by their,
The OSHA grant?
Yeah.
I mean, I've used a lot of your reports, and I find them to be pretty handy. I guess my questions would be more for Mike Andrews on how this interacts back through Eric, more than what the information is you're supplying. But I guess that if the Human Resource Council needed another category or a different report or a different way of looking at something, that you'd be the ones that provide that to them?
We would.
And in most cases, is that just at no cost to Eric, or what? How does that work out?
In many cases, the data, if it's off the shelf, is nearly free.
Senator, we do also have STEP funds that are that specifically support the STEP evaluation work that we do. Those funds also, our RNA within those funds also provides the formula based on the priorities established in statute for employing Alaskans. We provide that information to, again, which includes labor market information, unemployment statistics, provide that information to both STEP and JTPA for the allocation of their program. At this point, that's the only employment training program that we are providing that level of program evaluation for. It would be to do that additional work would take the support of the specific programs that we're evaluating.
Well, I appreciate that on the STEP, because I do have a problem with determining why there's $1.1 million being withheld by the Department of Labor and not transferred to RSA over to CRA to be distributed to the STEP program. And I assume that the majority of that is for your reports.
We have
said it. I think it's out of proportion with what we're paying for, which I believe is the non-resident hire. Is that what STEP's paying for?
Yes.
And
Senator,
I'm
sorry. There's about $250,000 of that. 1.2 supports the RNA's efforts. $250,000 of that is, at this point in legislation, not considered administrative. It is what the feds have required us to reimburse the unemployment insurance collection system for. The remainder, $100,000, goes to the ERIC, and the remainder goes to Community and Regional Affairs for administration.
Well, I'm not mentioning numbers here at this committee, but I will have some questions on where that $1.1 million breaks out, but that's kind of all. Any other questions on research and analysis? Seeing none, we'll move right along at a very rapid pace to the National Occupation Information Coordinating Committee.
You're cutting into our reception time. Yeah.
I was hoping to get a little farther than this, but this is the last one on Department of Labor.
The mission of the NOIC program is to coordinate the dissemination of occupational information throughout the state. Primary activities are to provide training on the use of occupational information, making presentations on occupational trends, and it supports an electronic delivery system of occupational information. Results, to assist students and job seekers in selecting careers, assist job and career counselors in identifying training and education needs of their clients, to assist education planners in designing programs to meet the needs of Alaskans, to coordinate education employment efforts. A measure is an increased availability of the information that we are producing.
Budget and amount of FTEs?
The NOIC is 90,000 and it's a 0.8.
I don't have any questions on
I have an overall question, but not specific to...
Okay, go for it. I don't have any on this one. Senator Bruce?
Within the department and all of these different programs, but specifically looking at who your customers are, which you're providing some information to Eric, and I would hope to the different programs so that they know who their customers are, how do you coordinate so that if I walk through the door looking for a job, who decides which program to shunt me off into? How do you code people, and what sort of coordination happens?
That, Senator, is a question for Rebecca Gomez.
Okay.
You do the exciting budget and information stuff.
Senator, can you restate the question? I know it had to do with who makes the assessment.
Well, right. If within the department, just the Department of Labor, but within the department, how do you decide, how do you code the customer, how do you decide which program to send people toward or to? Where does that happen? In other words, do I have to know what program I fit when I walk through the door, or does the department fit me to something?
We are not a training entity per se. Basically, the assessment that we would do is to assess if you were job ready or not. Have you worked in the past? Do you have an attachment to the labor market? Do your skills simply need to be updated? Do you need to go to an interview and resume workshop that we could provide for you, or do you need a GED? If you need a GED, or if it looks like you haven't had a work history, we would refer you then to probably JTPA or STEP, because we're not a training entity, but we do skills testing and things of those nature. So we would steer you after talking to one of our vocational counselors or employment specialists to another program, hopefully within a co-located environment. And that's how we would start the process, basically looking at your work history as a client, as a customer.
Okay. So I walk in the door and somebody assesses me and decides, obviously, if I'm a veteran and if I fit into the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program, but they decide where I should go.
Loosely, I will say yes. In the work session, we had an opportunity to talk to staff about this yesterday. We're really leaving the model of everyone who walks in the door has to be assessed by us. We really want to get away from that. There are a lot of people who don't really need one-on-one assistance. They can go to a computer terminal. They can go to the internet connections that we have in the office. So we basically provide self-service as an option, and then staff-assisted services in the form of job readiness workshops and reemployment services, or if someone really needs some help, we'll have one-on-one intensive services in the form of through vocational counseling program.
But that's still an assessment. Even if I use a computer terminal to get myself to knowing what door to go through,
That would be just to look up jobs that you might self-screen to. So it would be either in a workshop setting that you would make the determination yourself that you needed additional training or you didn't feel comfortable getting out into the job market, or a vocational counselor would make that assessment and then refer to a training entity from there.
Okay. How does the Work Opportunity Tax Credit Program relate to the employment services in that someone must talk to the businesses about joining the program? Then once a business says yes, we'll take the tax credit and hire so many people, then do you try to find, does employment services try to find the people to fit those jobs? Or does that go off to a different department for, like, ATEP to do, or?
One of the things that Jim Nordlund will address is just kind of how that dovetails together, how that fits together. We provide the forms and the information to employers through the extensive mailing that Bill talked about earlier, the outreach to about 9,000 employers this last year, and they have to take the initiative to fill that form out if they believe they have hired someone in that category. Something that Director Nordlund and I will be happy to address is kind of how that dovetails. We have job developers that are assisting ATAP clients, so we feel, and as Bill Eller said earlier, that number will go up, the number of employers who take advantage of the worker opportunity tax credit. So there's some linkages that are starting now with the full implementation of welfare reform.
So for at the moment, you send something to the employer, he decides, gee, I've got an employee that fits this category, he has to come back to you for certification that...
He has to fill out the form and send it to us to verify.
Okay. But you're not in the business of trying to find the employees to fit the job.
Well, in the co-located model and in working in cooperation and partnership with Health and Social Services, we do job development for the targeted ATAP group, but that is under the purview of Health and Social Services. We are kind of we receive an RSA from them. I know I'm not supposed to talk about money. And Llewellyn's going to find me on this one.
Okay.
She fined me yesterday. So what we would do then is we receive funds to job develop and other things that Director Nordlund will get into when he gives his presentation. So we're a part of the pie. We're like the employment link to the ATAP clientele.
Are the ATAP clientele your largest clientele?
No.
For this program, for the Worker Opportunity Tax Credit?
Oh, Worker Opportunity Tax Credit, I would, you know, I could confirm that. I would say off the top of my head, I would believe so. I'd be happy to verify that if you'd like, Senator.
I would think it isn't right now, but I'm sure it will be. But I don't know. Maybe you should see how that breaks down between the five programs.
It's things are definitely changing. I mean, we're definitely working toward more common customers than ever before.
I would hope to go along with what Senator Pierce is saying. If you send out notices to 9,000 employers, that you would pitch all your programs.
And that's the marketing information that I alluded to earlier. The job developers that are working with the employers in the state now have the Worker Opportunity Tax Credit that's under ESD's purview, and I believe there are two or three other incentive-type programs that they market to employers, and they're actually putting a brochure together now that as they try to develop jobs for these disadvantaged customers, that they provide the employer with the incentive information to act on.
It's not for existing employees anyway. It's for
no,
new employees.
It's cultivating new employees.
21 days as far as you could back up. So, I mean, it comes to a marketing program, not an existing employer program, although it's the employer's responsibility to fill out the paperwork if they deem they've hired somebody that might be capable or qualified for that program.
Yes, and the job developers are actually working on this marketing tool right now, so that more employers can take advantage of the tax credit.
And how much is that credit? I forgot. You know?
No, I don't know off the top of my head, and it looks as though Bill has left. Can I get that information to you tomorrow?
Well, we probably won't revisit this until we get into Mr. Nordlund's portion, but it'd be nice to have that in.
Okay, I'll make sure that Dwight gets that to you tomorrow.
I have another question.
Yes, Senator Pierce, I'm sorry.
Research and analysis versus NOICC. Research and analysis gathers the data and does some analysis and distributes the information. NOICC, the mission is to coordinate the distributing of the information, and I guess I don't understand the difference.
There is a, the NOIC's focus is on occupational information, which is a subset of what we do. The executive director or the administrative person that of the court that coordinates the committee is part of my staff. The NOIC committee here in Alaska is made up of members of several different departments, so that they are aware of our information. Primarily is their function. It's a coordinating function, an educational function to let people know what we've got, and a primary aspect of this function is this electronic career information system that is a part of the NOIC agenda. And this is part of the Department of Education. It's a coordinated effort between us and the Department of Education.
Senator, it was listed separately on the graph, but it really is a small part of RNA's of RNA as a whole function. We address generally what NOIC does within our presentation about RNA. NOIC was just listed separately on that grant because it does coordinate with a number of other agencies, unlike most other grants, federal grants of that type.
So it's almost a program within a program.
It's seamless, one within the other.
The unique piece of it is that it links education to...
Is it what?
It links education and careers, you know, like the school to work kind of operation, but...
So does the NOIC program actually go out into, say, high schools and universities?
The NOIC program, Senator, goes out to high schools, school districts, employment security offices, and gives training classes to counselors on the type of information that is available from us. Describes and provides training along with the DOE staff on the use of the electronic career information system. That is a lot of what most of what the NOIC funding is used for.
So the actual job seeker isn't the customer, it's the counselor.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
Fairly confused, but a little confused.
Okay. You guys up to stay in another half hour or so?
Not me. I'm going.
You gotta go.
You have to meet to go to
four.
It's up to you, Senator.
Well, we're through with labor. We have, I guess the question is whether or not to start CRA tonight or do it all in one clean sweep tomorrow morning. Senator Adams, what's your...
Tomorrow morning will be early.
We're scheduled for 9?
We're scheduled for 9.
And is the department available tomorrow also?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and call this at night, and I'll turn it
do
back
nine,
over
do 9 or do you want
to
do earlier?
All 9's fine. It'll give me time to prepare. So I'll turn it back over to you, Senator Pierce.
We will continue with Senate Finance tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.
I get that.
Yeah.
Great.
No, that's
the adult-based government work session still on workforce development.
Right.
9 a.m. We're adjourned.
Good. 400.